get on this record. The world is getting to be a strange place. A lot of crazy things are happening. A lot of questions need to be asked. A lot of puzzles need to be put together. And here are all the pieces that you're going to get from one man right here on The Big Puzzle with your host, the one and only man from Canada, Mr. Barry Brent.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. I had my microphone muted there, guys. Sorry. Good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and you gators and grannies to this Sunday afternoon edition of The Big Puzzle. I'm coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia through the facilities of People's Internet Radio. Thanks for tuning in today. People's Internet Radio is a viewer-supported radio station, so if you like what we're doing here, please reach into your pocket and throw in for the kitty. I want to say first, before I continue at all, I want my heart and my love goes out to the people in Humboldt, Saskatchewan for the 15 people that were lost in that absolutely horrific bus crash a couple days ago. I played senior hockey and competitive hockey for many years of my life, and I traveled literally thousands of miles on buses going to games and stuff. And it really hit home with me, and my love and heart and my prayers go out to these people. It's a real tragedy. So please put them in your prayers, guys. I'm actually really honored and privileged to be joined by Kevin Johnson here today. Kevin is one gentleman who, over the last little while, I've garnished an incredible amount of respect for, a gentleman with a lot of courage in light of what we see going on in Canada right now. I wish there was 10,000 more out there, Kevin, because we really need them right now. Welcome to the show, Kevin. And, I know I started the show with that, but when I get talking here, folks, my blood pressure is going to go up. I don't know if I'm the only one right now, Kevin, but what I see going on in Canada has almost got me to the point where I feel like I'm going insane, that I'm living in a dream world, that this really isn't happening in my country, but unfortunately it is. And thanks for joining me, buddy. And tell me I'm not going insane, please.
No, you're not going insane. Hello, and thanks for having me on the show. As you mentioned, my name is Kevin J. Johnston. I run freedomreport.ca, and you'll be happy to know, my friend, that we broke 700 videos about 5 weeks ago. So if you head over to the website, there certainly is a lot there. I began this whole thing full time in January of last year when we had the Peel District School Board. And for those who don't know, Peel Region houses three cities, Mississauga, Brampton, and Caledon. My hometown is Mississauga. We are to the immediate west of Toronto. Now, in there, you're representing about 1.6 to 1.7 million people. And our school board decided to allow Islamic prayer in Arabic with absolutely no checks and balances on what was being said. And the person who brought this to the school board and who led the charge is an imam named Ibrahim Hindi, who is a professed wife beater and admitted to the fact that he teaches wife beating to young Muslim males right here in my hometown. So what I had to do to really get people's attention, because I was being ignored, is I issued a $1,000 cash prize to anybody who brought me filming of Islamic hate speech in any Peel Region school. The Peel District School Board replied with a lawyer's letter from a guy named Jason Firth, I think was his name. I fired back at him saying, congratulations, you're part of the problem. He stopped communicating with me at all because he didn't want me to show up at his front door. It's something that I do. I negotiate with lawyers at their houses. They don't like it, but I do it. And you also have the right to do so, just so you know. However, in light of being threatened by a lawyer, I upped the $1,000 to $2,500. Naturally, of course, CBC and CTV, all of them, all the Canadian left-wing nutjob rags, decided to accuse me of Islamophobia and xenophobia and white supremacy and all the other insults that they can't back. That is who I am. That is what I do. I've been following Islam intently since my first introduction to it, and this was back in 2010, where my uncle passed away. But we didn't know that he was a Muslim, and as it turned out, he only converted to Islam because he was in a concentration camp in Czechoslovakia. Well, at the time, it was Czechoslovakia. Now it would be Slovakia on the west side. After the Germans surrendered, the British rounded everybody up. It didn't matter who they were. And in order to eat, my uncle had to convert to Islam. Well, we didn't know that he was Muslim. And what was interesting is when my uncle passed away, the Muslim community of Western Toronto swarmed the hospital, and they got his body before any of us white Canadian-born individuals even knew that he was dead. They had him all wrapped up in sheets in a box in a mosque within 12 hours. And they wouldn't let any of us reflect. They wouldn't let the women in the mosque to talk amongst themselves. And when we finally got to the graveyard, his wife of 65 years was not even allowed within 30 feet of the casket. That's the way Muslims treated all of us. So I began researching the Quran and Islam in general. And what I have discovered leaves me not terrified, but angry as hell. Now, we do know that in Southern Ontario, every politician within the NDP and the Liberal Party are completely owned by Islam. I know the names, and I'm not going to divulge them all yet because I'm waiting for my mayor run to begin on May the 1st for the city of Mississauga. Then I'm going to start divulging everything that I know about who's pulling the strings here. So to get back to your question, should you be going crazy? No. What you should be doing is continuing what you are right now, telling the Canadian public about it, but doing it more often, doing it louder, getting other people, not just me, but other people like me, to also come on your show and encourage them to have their own shows. But on top of that, we need to start making the politicians in this country extremely uncomfortable. We have a serious problem here. It's not just Islam. It is the fact that Canadian politicians are not in any way afraid of the Canadian public. And I mean in no way. We need to start filing lawsuits against them personally, taking groups of 150 to 500 people to their homes to serve those documents and demand answers while standing on their front lawns. We need to make sure that our politicians are afraid to even be politicians, so this way they're not stepping out of line. But the problem in Canada with that is you. And I've said this 1,000 times, is that Canadians are not polite. Canadians are cowards. They are willing to give up their rights and their freedoms for comfort. That is insane. You have to forget about the 60-inch television set, forget about the PlayStation, forget about online poker with people that you've never met. You actually have to get off your asses and do something about this. You have to become a unified force and make your politicians uncomfortable. Don't go to violence. That will actually look bad on you. But do go to utilizing the system to beat the system. You can bankrupt a politician by filing 1,000 lawsuits against them. Why not do that? Use the system to beat the system. Sorry, I've talked too long. Go ahead.
No, Kevin. Hey, you could listen. Honestly, I could listen to you talk for an hour, buddy. So you're never talking too long. And everything you just said absolutely resonates with me. And I'm quite aware of what's going on in Southern Ontario. I'm aware of what's going on inside the NDP and the Liberal government, and how we're totally being run now by factions in government that have no interest in Canadian or Canadians' futures. What I see right now in Canada with the introduction of Bill C-71 and Bill C-75, the attack on law-abiding citizens. We are being thrown stuff here in the last couple of months that absolutely boggles my mind. And you're right, Canadians seem to be complacent. I don't understand it, Kevin, because what I'm seeing right now is the biggest threat to our perceived freedoms that we've ever seen in our life. And yet Canadians are still watching the hockey game. So how do we get through?
If you're looking for an answer as to why that is, we are very much an isolationist society. We share one border with one country, and that's it. So we have been spared things like living across the Mediterranean Sea from insane Islamic African nations. We just don't have that problem here. So Canadians, they work on the basis that every country in the world is like Canada, and it's not. what Canadians, they can't think this way. Let me give you something very profound to think about, Canada. In this country, you can pick up the telephone and dial 911. People that you don't know and whom owe you nothing will show up at your house and save your life for no charge. Now, please name a single African nation that has that. Name a single Middle Eastern nation that has that. Name even some European nations that have that, aside from the United Kingdom. They've got their 999, which is no longer even staffed all that well. Is that not worth fighting for? Is that not worth protecting? And that is the problem, is that Canadians do not look at 911 and the Canadian desire to save lives as a plus. They don't view it as a privilege. They're all viewing it as something that is a right. They're taking it for granted. I despise the fact that anyone would take this type of freedom and this type of infrastructure for granted. But it's going away if you don't smarten up, Canada. And it will be your fault. You could blame the politicians if you want. But I still blame the people that didn't overthrow the government when they had the chance. And let me also just finish this one last thought, is that I have gone to numerous politicians' houses. I have gone to anyone that issues a ticket to me, like a parking ticket or otherwise. I go to their house to negotiate the ticket. They're cowards. They're afraid. When you go to a politician's home to say, hey, let's talk about things, you've got them by the balls. They think that they can screw up your life, but they're entitled to that privileged life at home in peace and quiet. You have to take that away from them. You got to make sure that you camp out in front of their houses. I mean, here's the simple thing, is I had a bylaw officer trespassing on my land here in Mississauga telling me that I couldn't have my fence painted the color red that I had painted it. I went to his house at 1 o'clock in the morning to discuss my fence, and he lost his mind. He called the cops. The cops told me not to go back. I said, I'm sorry, but I'm not listening to you. Get a court order. So, and bylaw officers in Mississauga have left me alone for the last 7 years. You can fight them. Just by showing up at their front door. Go ahead.
I think right now it's critical that Canadians really kind of look inside themselves, Kevin. A lot of people that are sitting on the fence that know that there's something very nefarious going on inside our government, but aren't actually getting involved. I'm might sound corny, but I'm at a point now where I'm trying to really, really get people involved, not to a point where you're yelling at them or raising your voice, but really looking them in the eye and saying, look, you know, just give me 5 minutes of your time to kind of explain to you what's going on inside our government. And, you know, I am seeing people wake up. I don't follow polls a lot, but I did look at the Angus Reid poll from yesterday, Kevin, and it states that only 8% of Canadians actually truly support the Liberals 100%. The numbers are, of course, we see a conservative movement growing in Canada. I don't trust any political party. I've always been under the understanding that they'll tell you what they want you to hear until they get elected and things change. But I do see a rise in conservatism across the country with Jason Kenney in Alberta. I love what the Alberta premiers are doing right now. Alberta, Manitoba, and Saskatchewan have all told the federal government they can take this carbon tax and deposit it where the sun don't shine. They're going to fight them with every tooth and nail that they can possibly get together. I love that kind of stuff. I see that rising everywhere. Go ahead.
And we need that kind of thing to rise. Well, let me tell you why. First off, many of you don't know this, but Canada is not really a country. It is a culmination of 10 countries. Each province really is its own independent nation. A dominion is not a country. We are called the Dominion of Canada. So yeah, the provinces, they can fight back. They can simply tell Justin no, and Justin can't do much about it. And let's just say, for example, Justin wanted to bring in the army to enforce his rule. He doesn't have enough army men loyal to him, and he's cut all their budgets anyway. So really, he doesn't have enough soldiers with enough equipment to even consider doing so. I don't think that Canada has the type of soldiers that would ever turn guns on Canadian citizens. It just wouldn't be like you see in Hollywood with every zombie movie where American soldiers blow away American citizens. That wouldn't happen here. Canadian soldiers are – they're party animals. Yeah, I've hung out on a lot of Canadian military bases. I can tell you right now they're not going to do so. So Justin has no way to enforce the carbon tax at all. And on top of that, the planet is not – warming up. The planet will get warmer. It'll get colder. It'll get warmer again. Do you know it was 2 degrees hotter at the peak of the Roman Empire than it is today? That's just the way the planet works. You know, look, people, we fly through the galaxy at an incredible rate of speed. The sun drags us through this Milky Way galaxy that we're in. Once in a while, our planet and our entire solar system will travel through some old solar radiation from a dead star that blew up millions of years ago. And that might increase the temperature of our planet a degree. And then we leave that particular part of the galaxy and universe never to return. That radiation never influences us again. That's just the reality of life. Get used to it. Human beings are simply not influential enough to do the amount of damage that Bob Ray and Justin Trudeau and Al Gore say that we are. You know, look, let's put this in perspective for all of you as well, okay? If you took every single human being and put them 8 inches apart from each other, shoulder to shoulder, they would all fit in Los Angeles County. That's just how few of us there are in relation to the size of the planet. Now, please tell me, do you think all those human beings, burping and farting in that particular part of the world together at the same time could warm the planet up? Yes or no? You know, do you think maybe that it might be rotting vegetation with all the forests and jungles we have around the world? Or how about volcanoes like in Hawaii right now that are constantly spewing heat and ash and whatnot? The planet, it's just not warming up. A volcano can do more to the planet than 100 million human beings. And the volcano can do that in minutes. Human beings have just not been able to warm the planet up since our inception 250,000 years ago. Think it through.
You're spot on, Kevin, because I've done the research that you were just talking about, and the planet has gone through massive changes in temperature. The planet's been covered by ice. It's been covered by water. It was at a point where it was almost uninhabitable, and these changes will continue. But what we're seeing with the carbon tax is the biggest fraud ever implemented on the Canadian people. And I say kudos to the provinces, and I hope it ripples right through the province and Justin gets this shoved right where it belongs. And that might be something that really opens up people's eyes to the rest of the corruption and how much we got to stand up to this right now. So he shoots himself in the foot all the time, and this is, I think, it's going to shoot him in the foot. I do.
But we can't say that it's going to do it. We have to tell you, Canada, you have to do it. Now, it's not going to happen by itself. Each and every one of you out there has to remind your friends and your family, no matter how liberal and left-wing they might be, remind them that they have no choice. You have got to get Justin Trudeau out of office. Otherwise, there will be a carbon tax. Eventually, gasoline will hit $3 a liter. And you have to pay attention to who it is you're voting for. Listen, I remember in Ontario when the Green Party of this province made the big announcement that cars and human beings were solely responsible for global warming. And one idiot, I forget his name, he shot off at the gums about the fact the planet is now 5 degrees hotter from the 1800s, which of course was shot down in a week or less publicly. Right. They were going to put a $2 tariff per liter on gasoline. You want to talk about the state of the economy when you triple the price of gasoline in a day? Mm-hmm. It's done. You want to talk about violence in the streets, people stealing gas? You want to talk about people getting shot over a tank of gasoline? That's what you do. Put a $2 tariff on, and you will see death in the streets.
You know, I just hope it doesn't get to that point. I hope that people can wake up before that point, because if it gets to that point, Kevin, we truly are in a world of hurt. I see what's happening to the Canadian economy. I see what's going on with investment in Canada. I see companies going south. I look at what's going on south of the border. Even though I'm not a Trump supporter, I do like a lot of things he's doing to the American economy. To say he's not doing some good things would be a false statement. I see all the attacks. I see the propaganda. But what I see going on in Canada right now should have every Canadian ready to get involved, and I'm trying to do my best, Kevin. I honestly, I'm at a point now where you know, every time I get a chance, no matter where I am, any situation I'm in, I'm trying to talk to people. I'm trying to elaborate on my radio a bit, because I know it's a time right now that we all really have to put the pedal to the metal. I feel the urgency. I see what's coming, buddy. And I'm not a professional radio host show guy. I don't have a great education, but common sense tells me right now that if we really don't get ourselves involved. And like you said, Kevin, it's not something we should do. It's absolutely our responsibility right now. There is no other way to describe it, but it's our responsibility to get involved and put this government out of power quick. That's what I see.
It most certainly is. And I want to go back to a point that I did make earlier about cowardice. Look, I want everyone to understand that you can never mistake cowardice for politeness. And regrettably, Canada, you are the easiest, the most easily led sheep out of the entire G20. And it's really because Canadians, they think that they work harder than everybody else in the world. You don't. I've been to all the Latin American nations. I recently was in Myanmar so that I could debunk the fake Rohingya crisis, which I have done twice now, and I will be doing again this coming Wednesday at 8:30 Eastern Standard Time. You'll be able to find that at freedomreport.us. And that's, again, Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I will debunk Bob Rae's bogus report, the fraudulent report on the Rohingya crisis. You want to talk about people that work hard. I mean, in Costa Rica, most people there live in sheds that they'll manufacture with whatever wood they can find and a piece of sheet metal, typically that they've stolen from a warehouse district somewhere. Mm-hmm. And they'll work a 12-hour day just to eat. You know, in Costa Rica, I went fishing with a guy who was a very humble fisherman. I wanted to see for myself how fishing was done in that country. We spent the whole day on the water, and all he came back with was 20 fish. And he was only able to sell them for about, was it 1,500 colones, I think is the name of their currency. About $1.50 Canadian is what he was getting for each one of these big fish that that he was catching. You know, now Myanmar, same idea. I was in the Rakhine State right by the Bangladesh border. People, I saw red snappers there that'll blow your mind. We're talking almost 2-foot red snappers that you would buy in Florida for about $25 fried or grilled or whatever. Right. The people are selling these things for 1,000 chat, which is a dollar Canadian. That's the name of their currency. So, I mean, these people, they have nothing, but they're happy. Listen, Canada, let me say this to you. In Myanmar, in the smaller villages and towns, what you'll find is a lot of houses are simply 8 tree logs stuck in the ground with tarps wrapped around for walls and a grass roof. Japan, Thailand, and South Korea, whenever they're finished with big advertising banners, big advertising campaigns, they'll simply ship all of those banners to the western state of Myanmar, which is a third world country, and people will grab those banners and wrap them around their houses, and all of a sudden, boom, they have instant roof and instant walls. So everywhere you go in that country, you see Japanese beer advertisements. But that's just because that's their houses, man. That is what they live in. And Canadians here, they bitch and complain about the idea that, you know, oh, I broke a fingernail at work, or my boyfriend doesn't listen to me, and, oh, I've got to get another oil change on my car. I can only afford the 68-inch TV. My cousin John is 72.
Who's winning the hockey game tonight, guys? Come on. Rah, rah, rah. Go Maple Leafs. God. Wow. Yeah, I got a friend, you know, funny you talked about Costa Rica there. I met a gentleman down in Costa Rica, moved from Canada to Costa Rica about, I think it was 4 years ago. He set himself up on top of a mountain. He is just, he says he's never been happier in his life, Kevin. He's living such a simple life. He's everything around him that he needs is provided by the forest. He built his house out of everything that was around him. Just totally went away from being a big businessman in Toronto to living a very simple, simple life in Costa Rica. And he says, buddy, I've never been happier. I got away from it all. But, you know, unfortunately, I can't do that right now, Kevin. I love my country, and I see a fight that we all got to get in right now. And win or lose, we got to get in this fight and do everything we can, because the window of opportunity, you know, it sounds corny, but the window of opportunity is going to close. We see all the attacks coming on our free speech through our government and the new legislation that they're trying to bring in. We see what's going on at our border. We see what's going on with our economy. Our country is in deep, deep trouble, and I'm not going to get out of the fight and go running away to some other country because I want to live on top of a mountain and not worry about it. Fortunately, I have to worry about my children and my grandchildren. And I look at them every day and I go, wow, the shit that's coming for you guys boggles my mind. So I'm in the fight and I'll do what I can, buddy.
Yeah. Period. Well, let me also, I'll tell you a very, very simple story. I went to a grade school called St. Gerard, and I was in that school in Mississauga from junior kindergarten all the way to grade 8. And it was a pretty tight-knit circle. I mean, I don't imagine by the time I hit grade 8 that there was any more than 60 grade 8 students at the school. And the good majority of us all stay in touch with each other. And once a year, there's a big get-together where all the students come in. Well, this particular year, after I was charged with a hate crime for speaking out against Islam, all of a sudden, now in the eyes of all these people that I've known since 1975, I have been called a racist POS, so that I am no longer welcome at these events. Now, that is not surprising. It's disappointing, but it's not surprising. Now, the one point that I did make is, fine and dandy, call me whatever names you want, but each and every one of you have children. And do you really think that after you've created a life that you have the right to just sit on your asses doing nothing and leaving Sharia law to your daughters? Think that through. You're going to be dead in 30 years. I mean, I'm already 47 years of age. I'll be dead in 35 years. The last thing in the world I'm going to do is leave Sharia law here for my kids and my grandkids. I Amen. Do not have the right to create a life and then just walk away from it saying, yeah, there you go. It's not going to happen.
But yeah, you know, I had a guy say that to me in the coffee shop. Sorry, Kevin, I got to interrupt you. I had somebody say that to me in the coffee shop a couple weeks ago. Guy's about 65 years old, and we got talking, and he says, you know, I don't have to worry about this shit. I'm going to be dead and gone. And I got up from the table, and I turned around. I was about to walk away, and I said, yeah, but you're leaving this for your fucking kids. Excuse my language, Kevin. Excuse me. I don't swear.
Okay. It's your show.
I know. Sorry, folks. I just make a point of not swearing, Kevin, because I really don't feel that's necessary. But that's exactly what I said to him. And I looked him right in the eye, and I said that to him. And I could see that it resonated with him. And you know what? You're right, Kevin. Like, even my son, I'm starting to see some things change. Even my son, I'm not going to bring it up a lot, but he, you know, the last couple of years of playing his video games and interacting with all these people on the internet, and I kind of sat down with him one night, and I kind of pointed out a few things. And I see him now actively get involved in groups and doing research and starting to get involved. Because I think he starts to realize the seriousness of the situation. We're trying to reach the millennials, you know. The millennials are one that are really going to influence what goes on here in the next little while. And I see the millennials starting to wake up, buddy. Even in the poll numbers, I start to see them waking up. So we've just got to put the pedal to the metal, my friend, because we are in a pile of poop right now.
Yeah, we sure are. We sure are. And just to go back now to the hate crime charge, I want everybody listening to understand how this worked. We have a mayor in Mississauga here. Her name is Bonnie Crombie, who has pretty much been diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder. She has spent over $40,000 in taxpayers' money putting photographs of herself in every hockey arena in our city. That's who we have as our leader. She found out I was going to run for mayor again against her, which I did 4 years ago. So she goes to the police to have me charged with a hate crime. She cited an article that I didn't even write. And the cops, they said, well, we'll investigate, but no charges. Then Ikra Khalid, who was the author of M103, she tries twice to get me charged. And the Crown in Brampton said, no, we can't do this. So Ikra Khalid has a couple of her friends and one of her assistants. They also tried. There were seven attempts made to have a criminal charge laid on me for what I have to say about Islam. And what I have to say about Islam is exactly the same. I have the same delivery you're hearing right now. And all I do is I quote the Quran, I quote statistics, and yeah, I make some pretty funny commentary, but that is my right to do so. I have never incited anyone to incite or to commit heinous acts of violence. But I have encouraged people to get in shape and learn how to fight, because if it does get out of hand, you're going to have to fight one day. Don't be one of those guys in their 40s who says, I can't lift 25 pounds because of my bum elbow, my bad knee, and the broken finger I had when I was 8. Don't make excuses. Get fit. Read more books. Just be prepared. That's my message. Mm-hmm. Well, Ikra Khalid and Bonnie Crombie, realizing they weren't going to get anywhere with the police and with the Crown attorneys, they went to Yasir Naqvi, who is a Pakistani terrorist supporter and the attorney general for the entire province of Ontario. He's the one that puts the charges through on me for hate and then brags about it nationally. That's the state of our country, everybody. This guy wasn't born here. We have photographs of him dealing with people who support terrorists, and that is who is allowed to put white Canadian-born males into the court system to try to bankrupt them through criminal charges. Now, what's interesting here is that some of the Crown attorneys that have been assigned to this, they don't want to be involved. I have not even entered a plea yet, and I was charged back in August of last year. So it's what they're trying to do here is intimidate me and intimidate everybody else like me and like you who speak the truth about everything. Then on top of that, I got hit with a $2.5 million lawsuit from an Islamic business owner here. His name is Mohammed Faqih. He runs a company called Paramount Fine Foods. They sued me for $2.5 million because I'm asking questions. What's your involvement with the spy agency, ISI, from Pakistan? Just tell us. Just get on the phone and tell me. I mean, you could get on the phone and lie to me and say, we have no involvement, and at least then I can tell that side of the story. But they wouldn't even call me on that. And they recently offered a buyout on the lawsuit of $10,000. Like, I'm going to pay that. No. This was your idea. You sued me. I want the trial. I want you on the stand so that I can question you about all of your political affiliations and everyone that you are allegedly bribing that works for the Ontario government. So getting sued, everybody, is not a bad thing. You have to learn how to enjoy that. I've been sued a few times for things I've said, and it never goes anywhere because everyone realizes, Kevin's not afraid of this. Kevin actually wants me on the stand. Let's settle. But they always offer to settle, and I always tell them the same thing. I'm not giving you a dime. In fact, you owe me gas money. And for those who don't know, we have the most expensive toll highway in the world right here in southern Ontario. So I got to drive that thing for $18 for 12 kilometers just to get to the courthouse. No.
$18?
Yeah, it's crazy, man. Yeah, look up the price. It's called Highway number 407 in Ontario. It was paid for with taxpayers' dollars and then sold to a Spanish company. So our highway, which connects the entire Greater Toronto Area to the far east side of the same place, is owned by a foreign company. And for some reason, now check this out. I mean, it is private property now, technically, but the Ontario Provincial Police patrol it and give out speeding tickets. How's that possible?
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. Just another example. I mean, at least what you're talking about, Kevin, we could uncover multiple instances of this of going on all through government. It's corrupt right to the core. But one thing I was going to ask you about is, what do you think of Doug Ford?
I was a fan beyond belief of his brother, Rob. I was lucky enough to meet Rob in person once. I met Rob actually at his house. And when I did so, there was nothing but pure love in Rob's eyes. Big smile, big welcoming guy, who's tall as hell too. I'm 5'5". So when I met him, he's about 6'2", 6'3", and a big jolly guy. He was just so filled with love and passion. I saw it in his eyes. I saw the soul of a loving man when I met Rob Ford. And Doug has the same mannerisms and the same look in his face as Rob does. I believe that Doug wants to bring back business to the province of Ontario. I believe that Doug wants to fix our disgusting and very perverse new sex education system here in Ontario. I believe the man when he says these things, and I'm pretty sure that Doug is going to be able to pull off at least half of what he's promised. He needs to be the next premier of our province. We have to get away from liberalism and NDPism in its entirety because it has killed us. So go Doug, and please vote PC. I mean, there are some candidates, some PC candidates I've met that I despise in every way, but at least if they win, Doug gets in.
Right. We're seeing the same thing in Alberta. We're seeing a rise in conservatism. We're seeing it in Alberta. We're seeing it in Saskatchewan. We're seeing it really start to rise across the country. I was looking at polling numbers for Ontario. In the Toronto area, which is the core of Liberal support in Canada, they're actually trailing. They're trailing the projects the Conservatives now by 12 points in the GTA area, which, like I said, is the biggest support for the Liberal governments in Canada. So we're seeing the numbers are really starting to come in now, Kevin, and people are starting to talk. People are actually having conversations about this because it's really starting to impact our lives, what's going on in Ottawa. And we're only starting to start – I mean, this stuff is – it's insanity. If people start looking at this and they don't go, hey, this is insane, then they don't have a brain, buddy, because it is. It's a total insanity. But people are starting to wake up, Kevin, so we really got to like you said, people out there that are listening that, you know, really aren't getting involved. Maybe they share links on the internet. Maybe they're on Facebook and they share information. Well, it's a little bit past that point, I believe. We really actually have to physically get involved. Like you said, Kevin, going to your MP's house and getting a group together of people, because there is a lot of us now that are pissed off. Well, it shouldn't be hard to get 50 or 100 of us together and march on somebody's lawn and put them under pressure. I like that idea. That's the first time I've really thought about that today. And, you know, it's time, guys. Great idea, Kevin.
It most certainly is. Now, if you don't mind, I'd just like to come around to the Myanmar bit here, mainly because it is so near and dear to my heart. What I told you earlier in the show that I went to Myanmar, which is also known as Burma. I was there for 2 weeks. We went into the war zone to find out about this Rohingya crisis and Canada's involvement in this, and why Canada is so eager to slander and libel the entire country of Myanmar. I'd never been there before, but I do know Buddhism well, and I know Hinduism well. I know Sikhism well, and I'm a cultural Christian myself. I know what's good and bad about all the religions out there, and with Islam, since I've read the Quran and the Hadiths and the life of Muhammad and so on, I can tell you a few things. Number one, there are two Qurans, both contradict each other, and that Quran is simultaneously peaceful and evil. It is both, more evil than peace. But there is not a shred of spirituality in Islam at all. It's just demands. It's commands for how you live your life. Do what we say or your head comes off. Do what we say or we'll light you on fire. Do what we say or you'll end up in slavery. There's a whole bunch of really nasty stuff in this book. Whereas in Buddhism, it's don't pray, don't go to church at a specific set of times, treat everybody well, including animals. You know, go out of your way to be nice to everybody. When you see a dog, feed the dog, don't run the dog over. Whereas in Islam, see a dog, tie it to a tree, and beat it to death. That's the difference between Islam and Buddhism. You know, and Hinduism and Buddhism are, you know, the same idea. Be spiritual, be nice, welcome everybody into your home or your temple, show them what's good about what you do, talk with them, feed them. You know, you can go to any Sikh or any Hindu temple anywhere in Ontario and get a free meal any time of the day. People don't know that stuff. That's why I like spiritual-based religions. Islam is not spiritual-based at all. Now, when someone wants to tell me that Buddhists are murdering Muslims for no reason whatsoever, of course, my ears perk up, my back gets up, my face turns red, and I will argue the case. So I went to Myanmar. There was a team of three of us. Michael McCormick is my cameraman, and there's also Rick Heisman, who is an Asia expert, and more specifically a Myanmar expert. He's from California. We all went to Yangon. That's where we landed. Then we took a puddle jumper plane to Sitwe, which is the biggest city in the Rakhine State. And with armed guards and three translators, we went through the entire war zone running cameras. We ran three cameras for 12 hours a day, every day for the whole time we were there. We questioned a lot of people. And here's the story, is that this Rohingya people are just Bengali Muslims. The word Rohingya was hijacked in the late 60s by ARSA, the Arkanese Rohingya Salvation Army, when they were trying to name themselves something. They picked this name. The name Rohingya just means old villager in the ancient language of Arkanese. That's all that it is. There was never a Rohingya people. These Bengali Muslims are instructed or were instructed in 2012 to move eastward into Myanmar and light cities on fire, which they did. They went to Sitwe, which is mostly wood and bamboo. The whole city is pretty much wood and bamboo, honestly. There's almost no concrete in that city. Right. And they lit the city on fire. The wind changed direction and blew back into their mosque. Now, their mosque was made of brick. And the reason that their mosque went up in flames is because the trees in their yard lit on fire and the gasoline that they were storing inside of their mosque, that ignited. Now, what happened is some photographers took photographs of the burning mosque and said, look, look, you see, Buddhists are burning down mosques all over the country. No, it was Muslims that burned down their own mosque. So in 2016, they tried the same stunt, and they succeeded in killing about 4,000 Buddhists and Hindus, violently, I might add. And in 2017, they did the same thing again, except this particular time, they were completely funded by Pakistan and Saudi Arabia, and they went in there and filmed themselves beheading every police officer that they could find in the Rakhine state. And they would just shout out, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. I mean, the footage is disgusting to look at. So when we were there, we interviewed Buddhists and Hindus. And what we found out was that the Bengali Muslims just, they never live in peace. They are there to beat up and harass and molest and rape as much as they can, because they're being instructed to do so by their imams and all of their religious leaders. We went to a Hindu temple in a very small village of less than 2,000 people. And inside of it, just people don't know this, but in Hindu temples, you almost always have Ganesh and Shiva and a Buddha statue. Those three statues are almost always in every temple. This particular small temple, which was just, it was brick, but it was made very haphazardly because these people are broke. But inside of it, there's no statue. There's just posters, color photocopies of Ganesha, Shiva, and Buddha. So we asked, first off, why is there a cage on your Hindu temple, and where are all of the statues? Well, they had to cage it up because Muslims kept going into the temple, and they would urinate and defecate all over the place. They would actually, they would smash all of the icons and all of the statues inside. They would literally defecate in their own hands and smear it on the walls. There were feces-covered handprints there while we were there. The people were washing their temple while we were there. This is what Muslims do outside of Bangladesh. And the big reason for it is they don't educate themselves. Bangladeshis are – they absolutely refuse education. The only education they get is the Quran. They also have a problem with groundwater being infested with high amounts of copper and lead and arsenic. So you've got people who are also inbred drinking this really terrible water, then being told that there is an Allah and you are the superior race of people because you believe in Allah. Now go kill everybody. And then they send them into Myanmar, and that's exactly what they do, is they kill, because they can't reason for themselves. They can't think for themselves. It's terrible. When we were there with all the Buddhist population and the Hindus and the Christians, we were treated like gold. When you look at a Buddhist, you see nothing but love in their eyes, just like Rob Ford. But when you look at the Muslims who are there, they are soulless. They have nothing but hate and anger and contempt in their souls. You can just see it in their eyes. And that's what we were there to prove. Now, Bob Rae, who was the former premier of the province of Ontario, he went there. Well, he says he went there. We don't think he did. We know that he was in Bangladesh, and he's come back with this scathing 48-page report lying about the fact that there is a Rohingya people, first off, and lying about the fact that Buddhists are just walking around Myanmar killing Muslims for no reason. That's what Bob Rae has now reported to the Canadian people. Now, that, like I said, this coming Wednesday at 8:30 p.m., I'm going to debunk it. I'm going to read the report and tell people what is factually incorrect, and I'll be showing various video that I took while I was actually on the ground in the war zone. And again, people, I hate to self-plug, but I'll do it anyway. If you go to freedomreport.us, that's where I'm going to be live.
I want you to share it one more time before the show's over, because I'm going to be listening, Kevin. You know that for a fact.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, appreciate just, you know, you're only touching the tip of the iceberg. You know, what we're talking about right here, right now, is just the tip of the iceberg of what's going on inside our media, what's going on inside our government, how the public is being propagandized, and how we're being misled. But like I said earlier, Kevin, I really do see an awakening right now in Canadian people. To a point of outrage. And this is just another example. I mean, some of this stuff I kind of heard about a little bit. I wasn't fully aware of everything that's going on over there. So I thank you for bringing that to the attention of the people that are listening in today. You know, we only got about 15 minutes left here. But, you know, when it comes to Doug Ford, I'm at a point when I want to believe that he's 100% for real. Because what he's saying, everything he has said, I've listened to him talk. I listened to everything that's going on in Ontario because it's pivotal in this country. And I want to believe that he's 100% for real. And I'm getting to that point, Kevin. I believe the man is for real, that he's got a heart, that he absolutely sees the destruction of this country, and he's going to step in there and make changes. I feel the same thing about Jason Kenney. And I'm not a supporter of political parties. I've always, you know, come to the belief that you've got a puppet on the right and a puppet on the left, and really they're all being controlled by the same entity. But I don't see something different happening right now in Canada. So,
well, people,
hope it's for like, real.
You have to understand this, everyone. I had a very interesting conversation last night. I went to one of the Polish Christian churches that we have here in Mississauga because there was a presentation that that took place by a Russian man who has been studying Islam for 30 years. And what he did is he absolutely debunks every false tale in the Quran. What an incredible presentation. Afterwards, here's what I'll say. Mississauga Mayor Bonnie Crombie is part of the Liberal Party. And she has made it clear that she wants to bring Sharia law to Mississauga with all of her behavior. Now, she's also one who has supported the nonsense of 72 genders. She has supported the teaching of anal sex to grade 5 students in our schools, and she has supported Motion M103. She publicly stated that we fully support Motion M103. Why would she do that? It's got to be money. It has to be money. I mean, she can't really be that stupid. The Polish community voted for her only because this Bonnie Crombie claimed to be Polish. There is some Polish in her background, and she speaks about 100 words of Polish, but you know, I could say the same thing to the Slovak community. My grandparents were Slovak, so I speak about 75 Slovak words. Does that mean I'm the best candidate in the world to represent the Slovak people? No, it just means I know 75 Slovak words. That's it. I mean, but Polish folks, they voted for her and they regret it. I was told last night by the leader of the Polish community that they are not going to vote for Bonnie Crombie, but they need guidance. They need to understand who's coming up and why they should vote for that individual. So the good news is that everybody is fed up with liberalism. Everyone is fed up with left-wing thinking. Mississaugans are certainly fed up with Bonnie Crombie, absolutely fed up with her. And even though I only scored 741 votes in the last election, there's a good chance I can win it this year based on the fact that I am a conservative, a patriot, and I have built a really good reputation in the last year and a half of someone who tells the truth no matter what the consequences are. And as it stands, the consequences are being charged with a hate crime and being sued by an Islamic restaurant owner. And that's really about as far as they've taken it. You know, Canadians, I want you not to be afraid, okay?
Amen.
If you watch my channel, you will see that I tell the whole truth about Islam. 730, maybe even 740 videos right now. Most of them are about Islam and what's wrong with it. I haven't even had my tires slashed in my driveway. I haven't even had an egg thrown at me in public. I just get the occasional Muslim gives me a dirty look. But that's okay. They're not voting for me anyway, and they would probably vote for Sharia law the second they were given the opportunity to do so. I want to be the guy who works for absolutely everybody, but the special interest groups who represent less than 1,000th of 1% of anything, they need to be told where to go. And I'm that guy. There are no such thing as transgender people here. There are just people who are either confused or looking for attention or have weird sexual fetishes that now they want all of us to know about. Not interested. If it turns you on to wear pantyhose and a miniskirt at home, do it at home. Nobody cares. Keep it at home. But don't make it policy, and don't come to me when I'm the mayor of Mississauga looking for a handout to say you need money so you can feel better about yourself and your perversion. It's not going to happen. Look, I also, as the mayor of the city, I'm going to make sure that I shut down groups like this. I got a phone call from a group, and if you get a chance, people, just go to Google right now and type in my name, Kevin J. Johnston, and the Perverted Bunch. I got a phone call from a 19-year-old girl who set up this group called Canvas. And Canvas, what they do is they walk from school to school teaching children about this transgender crap. And what she told me in the first 2 minutes of our conversation is that children as young as 2 years of age begin to question their gender, and that we need to get them to identify with the gender of their choice before they get into kindergarten. And I lost my mind. I said, who are you getting this from? What science catalog are you quoting? What doctor ever put his name on this? Where is the information coming from? So I kept her on the phone for about 35 minutes, shooting down in flames every single one of her arguments. And eventually she realized that she made a mistake contacting me and kept saying, I have to go. I've got a meeting. I kept her on as long as I could. Like that, I would actually make sure that if they ever entered a school, that they would be arrested for conspiracy to commit rape, because that is what they're trying to do. They're trying to get kids to understand this simple thing, that oral sex is not sex. So just go ahead and blow each other in the bathroom. They're teaching this to kids in grade one and grade two. No, you don't do that. You teach kids in grade one and grade two math, science,
birds, flowers, geography,
shoes, get school on time, brush your teeth, go to bed, wash behind your
ear. Kid.
Yeah, go on the playground.
God, Kevin, I get so pissed off when I look at Bill C-89 in Ontario and the sex education program and SOGI-123 being implemented in our schools. But you know what? Canadians are rallying against it, buddy. And I've met some spark plugs here in the last couple of weeks that are just really putting the hammer to the nail, because this is absolute bull crap what's going on in our schools. 1% of the population indoctrinating our children in something that's so evil and benign. Who the hell wants to teach a child when they're 9 years old about anal sex? Where is that even into their brains at 9 years old, folks? You got to realize, folks, that this is a very dark and evil agenda, and I got to call it what it is. It's bloody evil, Kevin.
Yeah, it most certainly is. It's as evil as you get, and that's the problem.
With me, buddy. It touches home with me. It really does.
Well, it should. It should. And just to we got a couple of minutes here. Just to put it in perspective for you is that Ontario, when they had the choice to vote between Tim Hudak, who wanted to create a million jobs in the province, and Kathleen Wynne, whose entire campaign was, I'm gay, I'm gay, I'm a lesbian, I'm gay, look at me, I'm gay, people voted for her.
Yes, the
unions got behind Kathleen Wynne because obviously she promised them that they could do whatever the hell they wanted, and that's exactly what has happened here. And to remind everybody, Kathleen Wynne is not really gay. She was married to a man for quite some time, had a couple of kids with the guy, and then realized, you know, a heterosexual relationship is a lot of work. I'm going to take the easy route out and find a woman that looks like a man, and I'm going to marry her, and I'm going to force my husband to live in the basement, which he did, complete cuckold. And then I'm going to go public with this so that I can get into the press for free. No matter how much damage it does to my children and their reputations and their future careers, it doesn't matter because I'm a self-centered pig. Oh, and by the way, vote for me because I'm gay, and Ontarians did, and this is what you get when you vote for somebody based on their sexuality and their perversion. You
That's why she's going to get her ass kicked right out of there. because we're sick of this crap. I'm sick of it, and a lot of Canadians feel the same way, and it's time to take our country back, Kevin. It really is, because if we let this go any farther, our kids are really going to pay the price, and I can't do that. I love having you on. I'm going to plug one gentleman that I listen to all the time, and of course you know who he is Jordan Peterson, and I urge people. I don't agree with 100% of what Jordan says. Nobody will ever agree with 100% of anybody says. But, boy, he really, really hits it home. And if you really kind of want to get an insight into what's happening in our society and how it all is playing together, I urge you to listen to him because he's pointed out a lot of things to me, Kevin. I'm sure you've listened to him. I don't know if you've had him on your show or not.
I have not had him on my show, but believe me, I would very much like to talk with him. I have a number of questions that I would ask that I don't think he's been asked before by any other media outlet. I am the guy that asks the very difficult questions, but I would never ask Jordan Peterson a difficult question for the purpose of having him stumble, because I know that he wouldn't. I want to ask the difficult questions because people need to hear them, and I know that he has the answers.
He'll give it to you right from his heart.
You're right. He's one of the few that actually has answers in our society, and that's why I admire him like you wouldn't believe. And when people criticize him for making $55,000 a month on Patreon, I say that's not enough. Give him more. He deserves
Give him a million and get the word out there.
That's damn right. Give him more.
Let's line up the lawyers and let's line up the troops. It's time to put this to action. And yeah, Jordan Peterson, he has influenced a lot of my thoughts. And I urge people, if you really want to listen to a gentleman that really kind of hits it on the head, I urge you guys to go listen to Jordan Peterson and share his videos and his talks around, because I've seen people and testimonials on YouTube and other places on the internet, Kevin, that people have listened to this gentleman talk and he has absolutely turned their life around. And I've seen that so many times now. So he is absolutely a jewel in our society, and we need 1,000 more like him or 10,000 more like him. You know, we're getting down to the last 4 minutes here, Kevin. I'm going to let you plug your show one more time and tell people a little bit about your videos and a quick blurt for a couple minutes, and then five-minute break. Hey, buddy, thanks for coming on.
Hey, listen, thank you very much for having me on the show. It's fantastic. So the shameless self-promotion is, my name is Kevin J. Johnston from freedomreport.ca. I also have the second YouTube channel, freedomreport.us. Whenever I do a live broadcast, I do it from the freedomreport.us YouTube channel. I'm in Facebook jail for another 2 days. Feel free to follow me there or add me as a friend. That's facebook.com/KevinJJohnston300. And I have an online radio station that's going to light up very shortly here, especially with me running for mayor in the fifth biggest city in the country. That's KJJradio.com. When in doubt, though, anybody, I know I've thrown a lot of domain names at you there. When in doubt, just go to freedomreport.ca. All of my links are there. You can donate to me there, and you can also purchase a share in my upcoming documentary called Rohingya Lie, which is the full-blown documentary that we are cutting together right now from my trip to Myanmar, where I debunk every single lie about the fake Rohingya crisis. I'm going to open everyone's eyes to what's really happening in Myanmar, but also what's really happening with our government and our left-wing media. Thank you for letting me plug myself. And again, I can't wait for the next time we talk.
Hey, Kevin, it's always a pleasure. I'm going to call you the mouth that roars. Okay, great. And you know what, Kevin? We'll have you back in real soon. And folks, get behind what Kevin's doing. Listen to some of the videos, and I'm sure you'll have the same response that I had when I started following Kevin and some of his work, that he is truly in this for the good of our future. And I praise you for what you're doing, Kevin. You've got balls the size of an elephant, and keep up the good work, brother.
My pleasure, and I will. I promise we'll see you soon. Take care.
Thank you. Okay, guys, we're going to take about a 3 or 4 minute break here, and then I'm going to be back with the mad scientist, Shaziz, and you guys are going to get some information put to you today that I don't think you've heard before, so hang in there. We'll be back in 5 minutes or so. Well, welcome back to the second hour of the Big Puzzle, folks. That was a really good conversation in the first hour. I thank Kevin for coming on, and I'll be getting that guy back on real soon, and I do support what he's doing, and the guy has really truly his heart, so thanks again, Kevin, for coming on. Second hour, we're going to shift gears here a little bit. I've met Shaziz about, I think it was about 4 years ago I first met him, and I started looking at some of the stuff he's done. I've been involved in the Knights of the Round Table, which is a show we do on Sundays, Mad Scientist on Saturdays. And over the years, I've got to know where this man's heart really is. And we're going to talk about a few simple, free energy devices in this hour. And I'm going to let Shiziz bring a few of those things to your attention. Thanks for joining me, Shiziz. And how are you doing today?
Oh, pretty good. Hope y'all doing well, too.
So tell me what you've been working on lately. I mean, we've talked about numerous things. I mean, one of the things that to me seems like the simplest thing in the world is the development of the hydrogen cell and why the whole world is not running their automobiles and trains and trucks on water. That one I have a hard time wrapping my mind around. So just why aren't we doing that? What's the holdback?
Pretty sure it's all got to do with financial control because, you know, basic science says that water is hydrogen and oxygen, and the harder you try to convince somebody that you can quite literally run an internal combustion engine on water, the harder they fight back. The thing about it is right now these engines that we're actually running, I don't know if you've ever heard the term, what is the term I'm looking for? Hydrocarbons. All right. Well, in a sense, there's already water in your fuel. All right. Regardless of, all the different octanes and stuff like that and different types of additives they put in the fuel. But quite literally, you're using hydrogen. You're actually even using nitrogen from when your air intake comes in as well. But the simple of it is, simple science, you can engineer an internal combustion engine to literally run on any specific fuel. You could design an actual engine that would run on water. See, we already know that water is a liquid, can't be compressed. So we could actually use water for hydraulics. So we know that that part of physics is available. We can use water through a positive displacement pump into a cylinder and be able to lift a lot of weight with a little bit of power input, and be able to use it like the tractors that you see, front loader tractors or bobcats or bulldozers. They all use hydraulics, basically liquid. But We also know that you can boil water, and when you boil water, it changes its state of matter. So now it's not a liquid anymore. It's at a certain point, it becomes a gas, which the molecules are broken down smaller. And we know that water will expand 1,600 times its volume, so we know that we also can get pressure out of it by introducing heat to the water. And then, from that point on, we can break the water molecule down yet even further. We can atomize it the same way that a diesel engine does. And from that point on, we can break it down yet even further using sonic vaporization techniques that's readily available on the market. We can bring the water molecule down to such a small portion that when you basically put it into – if you take a cylinder and you bring the cylinder up to operating temperature, water will boil at 212 degrees Fahrenheit. So anything above that, you start to turn into steam. And at certain temperatures, it's superheated steam. And after that point there, just like a diesel engine using compression ignition, you can quite literally, with the pressure and the temperature, crack the water and the hydrogen molecules on demand. So right out of the gate, you start warming up the water, then you heat it up yet even farther, and as it's going through the system, you start breaking that water molecule down, and by the time it gets up there, using like induction-style heating on the cylinder, you can bring that cylinder up to 300 degrees Fahrenheit, and the moment that little piece of water hits inside that cylinder, it will do its job just like a steam engine. It'll start running like a steam engine, and from that point on, it'll do just like they did back in the old days whenever they got the tractors up to operating temperature. They would inject water into the cylinders to save on fuel. And even in the airplane industry, they did the same exact thing. In the airplane industry, water was so powerful that you could only run this for a few seconds. Otherwise, you'd blow the head off the top of the motor. You'd tear your motor up because that's how powerful it was. The oxygen is explosive and hydrogen's implosive, so you're getting a two-for-one bang for your buck in there. In the process of separating hydrogen and oxygen, you release an electrical charge. That's how some of the hydrogen cells actually work, to give you electricity to run electric motors and such. So the science is there. The technology is there. It's been there all along. But to get somebody to understand that the laws of thermodynamics doesn't limit you to I despise the laws of thermodynamics for the reason that if you look them up, you'll see that it basically tries to convince people that perpetual motion, over unity, and zero point energy is not remotely possible. But we're not even going for those. And even using the term free energy these days is taboo, because if you say free energy to somebody, they automatically think about all these people out there trying to scam everybody for free energy devices, when in fact, we're surrounded by free energy. If you can't find it, you're not looking hard enough. There's energy in the air. There's energy. Look at the oceans, three quarters covered in water. That's hydrogen and oxygen. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And the hydrogen technology is not only cleaner, it's more powerful. And when you're done using the energy that's released from that interaction, guess what you get out the exhaust? Water.
Water. Well, you know, I know that this technology, exists. The U.S. Navy knows that this technology exists because they made a statement on one of their websites, and I'm going to go find it, that they were planning on running all their Navy ships on hydrogen cell technology by the year 2025. Yep. So to say that they don't know this is here, but of course, we're talking about the petrodollar. We're talking about the control grid that controls this planet. And they are going to fight tooth and nail from keeping this information from the public. But if people really could grasp the fact that we can run our automobiles on water instead of going to the gas station and giving these conglomerates that are killing our planet $5 or $6 a gallon for gasoline or whatever it is in your neck of the woods, to me, it's a no-brainer. But unfortunately, we know what's holding it back, Jesus. Go ahead.
I'll tell you what's killing we the people is that we have quite literally trusted in our education system to the extent that we don't believe certain things are possible. If the guy in the white lab coat says it's not possible, then it must not be possible. And so, like I keep telling everybody, if you had access to a machine shop, and you'd humor me long enough to bring the right crew in there, and we could sit down, we could engineer this engine from start to finish using every bit of physics known to man and every bit of basic science, and we could engineer this engine to do exactly what I said, where you run it straight off of pure distilled water with no additives. See, one of the deals that they keep trying to say about hydrogen technology is electrolysis. Electrolysis is the worst possible way to do it, and that wasn't even the way that Stan Myers was doing it. You can crack it with radio waves, you know. Water's a dipole molecule. So if you got a fast enough wave, you can rip that water molecule apart. Even though water is the most stable molecule on the planet, it's also the most powerful one as well. Because the things that you can do with water, you can cut through steel with water. You can cut through wood like as if it was just cut and sanded at the same exact time. See what I mean?
Yeah, I know. It's amazing what water can do, the power of water. And that's, we're just talking about the applications of physical for our bodies. Our bodies on top, man. I've been doing some looking into water, and boy, I'll tell you, pretty intricate part of our body, and the amazing things it does to our body if we're drinking good water is just, it blows my mind. She says, yeah, and there's going to be wars fought over it soon. You know that. No, who knows if there's monopolies trying to control it.
But to see that, to fight a war over water is pure ridiculousness. You know, I keep saying this. There were people during a drought in California that were talking about how they were going to run out of fresh water. And I'm sitting there smacking my head. I'm like, what the heck are you talking about? You're standing next to the ocean. And they're like, well, that's fresh water, stupid. You know, and I'm saying, okay, let me ask you a question. Have you ever heard of Dubai? And they're like, well, no, what? And I said, well, those folks over there not only built the land that their skyscrapers are standing on from the sand that they dredged out of the ocean, but they also built huge desalination plants, and they pump water all the way up those buildings to the top and have that water come down. And using physics, they can cool that building And they have fresh water and water for their toilets and showers and all that as well. And they're pulling it right out of the ocean.
Yep. And agriculture, like you wouldn't believe, I looked in some of the agriculture reports from Dubai because of their access to water now is unlimited. Wake up, guys. We can all do the same thing. So just tell us there's no water. If they tell us there's no water, tell them take a look at Dubai.
If you died of thirst standing next to the ocean, you did not pay attention in science class. I'm sorry. I mean, it sounds rude, but there's a guy on YouTube, he's taking plastic bottles and he's putting them out there in the beach next to a campfire, and he's distilling water right there on the beach using trash. All right, that's it's simple. You get the water hot, the water turns into steam, all the heavies stay behind, and the fresh water is now in a basically a vapor, a cloud, and through condensation, cool it down.
Yeah, I looked at it. It's so simple to desalinate water. I didn't realize it was that simple, but it is. So, I mean, come on. It's a no-brainer, right? So if they tell us there's a water crisis, guys, tell them, take a look at Dubai.
Yeah, why are you doing it? United States Navy in 1984 had old boiler systems in their deal. I can't remember what year they finally phased boilers out, but nonetheless, you'll start off from port with a full tank of fresh water. And then after a certain point, because you're sharing the fresh water with the boiler system, after the first portion of your journey, you start to run low on fresh water. So there is a point at which they have to start producing their own fresh water using desalinization techniques. And the boiler comes before the man. So if you're out to sea for a long time and you're running low on fresh water, well, then you'll start taking salt water showers, and that's no fun because it kills your soap suds. But it's a reality. But those ships were capable of producing fresh water to fill those tanks back up while they were underway.
Wow. I bet you most people have never even heard that before, Shazis.
No.
But I kind of actually saw that once, and I read that. And, they've been keeping it quiet for a lot of years. But, you know, shows like this, we actually start talking about this, and I hope people go looking into it themselves. And, let's start producing it ourselves because, you know, the government's never going to allow us to do this. And they'll fight us tooth and nail. But we need to do stuff like this now.
That's why I call it mad science over on my side of the fence, because it makes me mad. We got all the technology necessary to uplift all the people around this world and so they can live, you know, a decent life in comfort with water and shelter and everything they need. And we have people that just spew out ridiculousness on a regular basis trying to say that things aren't possible when basic science says otherwise. Now, either you tell me that what they said back then was wrong and we all got to start over fresh, or you change the science book.
Well, you take into light consideration that everything we've ever been told is a lie. This would just be a continuation of that in my mind.
Well, see, they messed with the wrong guy when they messed with old Shazis, because I was a science geek, man. That's one of the reasons why I had a little bit of a rough time in school, because I was a bookworm. I got good grades, and it was funny because years later I had some guy ask me after we had a long conversation. He says, "How is it you know so much?" And I said, "Because I paid attention in school." that's simple. But,
when I think back. Go ahead. I think back at school. I don't think I paid attention like you, but it's good that children are now taught to question everything because they're being indoctrinated like crazy. And I see that everywhere in our school system. So it's not like the old days. In the old days, we actually took frogs and dissected them in class. I remember that. You don't see that in school anymore, do you, Shazis?
No.
Johnny being told that he can be a girl or a tree.
I was the kid that the teacher hated. I was the teacher's worst nightmare because I questioned everything. Okay, well, you say this is possible, but what about this right here? Oh, no, that's not possible. Then I could explain to them in graphic detail why it should be possible according to their physics. So the teacher didn't like me too much when I was a kid. I was a smart aleck, I guess.
Well, You know, we've had many, many conversations in the past, Shaziz, and I know we both pay attention to what's going on to our planet and the breakdown of species and what we're seeing with our biosphere and animals and the oceans especially. And, you know, I spend a lot of time focusing on political, not a lot of my time, but a bit of my time, because I need to be aware of what's going on around me. But I really now find myself focusing really on the planet. And what I see going on right now, it absolutely drives me crazy. If I project myself 10 years down the road, I really got to ask myself, what's this world going to be like? And when I get guys like you on, we have all these answers, we have all the solutions, but you know, I keep wondering, what is it going to take for the human race to wake up and realize that the new car in their driveway or the 60-inch TV or their new house is absolutely frivolous? It's going to mean nothing in the future if we can't feed ourselves and if we don't have food for our children and we don't have a planet to live on. And that's really what I, you know, without being a fearmonger, I have to be realistic about what I see. I don't believe that we're at a point where we can't fix it. But I do believe, honestly, that we don't have another generation to fix the problems I see coming for the planet. And, you know, that I base that on a lot of my studies.
Larry,
I think I'm being unrealistic. So here we have the answers. You know, we have the answers, folks.
I don't look at you as a fearmonger. I mean, you're speaking the truth, because there's only so much this world can actually take. But these people out here, we have the solutions to resolve these problems. That's my position on the deal. If we keep going down the path that we're going down, we're going to see everything unfold just like you said. And there's no doubt about it, because, you know, your environment can only tolerate so much, and then it becomes uninhabitable for you for many years, if not thousands of years, or could even potentially be permanent under, you know, circumstances. Somebody made a big enough mess. But at this point in the game, we're not hopeless yet. You see what I'm saying? But I don't think you're a fearmonger for pointing it out. I mean, it's somebody's got to say, hey, there's a reason why those fish are going belly up over there, you know? And it stops being a conspiracy theory when birds start falling out of the sky.
Yeah, it starts to really hit home when we see what's going on right now on the coast of British Columbia with a complete shutdown of all the bottom fish. And yep. DFO in British Columbia is not giving us a reason. There is multiple people right now questioning DFO why all our ground fish have been shut down. But they have shut them down, and they're not telling us why. If that doesn't alarm you, folks, then you really do have your head in the sand.
If any indication of what went on back during the day during the British Petroleum debacle, where they started pumping corrosive into the ocean to break this water up, they call it dispersants, or break this oil up, they call it dispersants. Well, anybody with common sense would sit back and think, wait a second, fish have oil in them, so how's that going to affect the fish? You know, and they didn't contemplate on that over the years of dumping thousands of gallons. From what I understand, they're still doing it today, but in supposedly less quantities, because I guess the EPA said that they had to cut back. Well, if they're pumping that stuff down in there and it's breaking that oil down in the fish, you're talking about a huge environmental impact in that certain area. And as crazy as it may sound, you're also talking about changing temperatures in that area from that reaction of what's going on. Think about when plants rot, what happens? It releases heat, all right? And so any kind of collapse going on in that system is going to change water temperatures. Even if it's only a tiny fraction, those fish that's out there in the ocean, they're used to certain temperatures. The tropical fish, they're used to certain temperatures. And if you start changing that environment, you're going to see a result. And that's what I've been trying to say for a long time, especially when it comes to the Fukushima deal. If you got hot water from a radioactive plant going down in there, how is that temperature changing in there? If you put cold and hot together, you obviously get a reaction. You can literally move the Gulf Stream one way or another by putting hot water to it. You see what I mean?
Yep. Well, we're seeing multiple anomalies in the weather worldwide right now. Which is, and if people aren't seeing that or aren't aware of it, they're just not paying attention. We're seeing chaos right now in our weather that, without overramping it, that I've never seen before. And I kind of been studying this stuff for the last 3 or 4 years and watching storms unfold and events unfold. I've been paying attention to major flood events around the planet over the last 4 or 5 years. And we're seeing an incredible spike in this kind of activity in the last couple months. And don't believe me, folks, just go and look it up yourself because the information's out there. And why is that all happening? Well, there's multiple things affecting our weather. And what you're talking about is one of them. But I believe, you know, what's going on with Fukushima, it's not just the warm water that you're dumping into the ocean. It's the amount of the nuclear isotopes that are invading our environment. This is not conducive to human or animal life. And we're really starting to see the effects in the ocean now. I've studied the reports on the Copper River, one of the major salmon rivers in Oregon. I was looking at the reports on that for the last 4 years and watching the drop. I'm looking at the drops from DFO on our reports last year where they shut down a lot of our species for extended length of time. Now I see the DFO closing our bottom fish. Now, why that's going on, we're going to try and find out. But that, to me, is alarming because bottom fish in the ocean around Prince Rupert, around the coast of British Columbia, have always been hugely abundant. We can literally go out there and drop a line on the bottom, and you're pulling up cod or you're pulling up red snapper. It's been that way for years, and now all of a sudden they shut it right down. And I'm going like, what's going on? But they won't disclose information. We're going to see some major anomalies in the ocean in the next couple of years. I believe that. We're seeing it now. And really, if we don't nip this in the bud, the ocean provides all life on this planet. She says there is no second ocean. And if it gets damaged to the point that it's not going to be sustainable, which, you know, I hate to say it, but realistically, we could be the generation that experiences that. And I don't think that's any kind of legacy I want to be involved in. No, we see all kinds of anomalies with birds, and everywhere I look, I see abnormalities. So we're kind of in a dangerous time, but I don't believe it's too late. If we really get our shit together, we can change it. Excuse my language.
We mentioned on the Mad Science, I think, show yesterday or Saturday about, we were just talking about different types of fuels and stuff, and we talked about duckweed and watermill. And those two plants right there, because you and I got in a conversation about hemp, but those two plants right there, they're not naturally overtaking ponds. What's going on is, like, for example, that farmer next to you that uses fertilizers out there and some maybe cow manure or whatever, and anhydrous ammonia to put more nitrogen in the soil and all that. Well, all those fertilizers are making that ground really rich in nutrients over there. And so basically when it rains and that runoff comes down and fills up your pond, now your pond is out of balance. It's so over nutrient that those plants begin to take over. And if you don't have enough fish in there that can eat those plants fast enough, because of watermill and duckweed, ducks eat them, doggone chickens will eat them, fish will eat them. Even turtles will eat them. Now, there's natural animals that will eat those up. All right. Well, once that covers that entire pond, your ecosystem underneath that pond collapses because it's no longer getting sunlight, and then the water becomes stagnant and the pond dies off. You ain't got no more fish in there. But the amazing deal about this is, that stuff is the way that nature tries to put things back in balance. So that watermill and that duckweed, the duckweed mostly, filters out any toxins in that water. And it also, it takes all the nutrients out of that water as well. But if you ever looked at what once was a stagnant pond that is covered up with that duckweed, move the water back and you'll note how clear that water really is.
Mm-hmm.
That is an act. What happened to destroy that pond was an accident that the farmer didn't realize. It was a side effect of what the farmer was doing, but it was nature's way of cleaning up that side effect that the farmer caused. But if we use that knowledge of what just happened right there, we could, number one, keep our ponds from ever getting destroyed like that. And that stuff, it would be an amazing biofuel. actually humans can eat it, but it has to be prepared in a certain way because they have little spiny tentacles and they'll make you really bad discomfort or whatever. Anyway, but it's in worst case scenario, people food, fertilizer for your garden, fish food, duck food, chicken food. And so there's a plus right there, nature provided. Out of one man's mistake of the way he did his farm field, nature come in with the answer, the solution on how to fix that. And then if you start cleaning that pond up, you could take half of that stuff off every single day. And the next 24 or 48 hours, you come back out there, the whole pond's full again. That's how fast stuff reproduces. So you could turn it into biofuel, you know? You could turn it into
That's just one example of many, many things that we can talk about that would be beneficial if we embrace them and start using them in our society. You know, of course, yesterday we got into, and I'm not going to get into a cannabis rant today because it'll take the rest of the show up. But, when we talk about things that can detoxify and clean up the planet, of course, cannabis is number one in my books because of the detoxification properties of the root of the cannabis plant, what it can be done for our fuel, what it can be done for our fiber, what it can be done to eliminate deforestation of the planet. I've read four reports now, and all four, which is based on the four that I've read, and one's from NOAA, one was from another oceanic organization, one was from the University of Southern California, Berkeley, that are studying plankton levels in the Pacific Ocean. And every one of these reports put the drop now, and it shocks me when I talk about this, but it's something we really got to bring to people's attention that, you know, plankton now, although the highest numbers I read was a report done by University of Southern California, Berkeley, put the numbers at about 52 to 54% depletion of plankton that were alive on the planet in 1970. And, you know, that might not sound like anything to people, but when we factor into the consideration that, you know, plankton produces 60% of the oxygen that we breathe on this planet, it really becomes an issue. We're seeing the effects of oxygen deprivation in this planet now. We're taking down our forests and we're killing the plankton. It's got to come to a stop. Well, and that's something that really shocks me. If those numbers continue to keep going, guys, what are we going to be at in another 10 years? Are we going to be at 70% depletion of plankton? Are we going to be at 80%? Is it going to accelerate? These are questions, Shaziz, that we really don't even want to ask ourselves, but unfortunately we're having to ask ourselves now.
Well, we got solutions to every single one of these problems. That's the whole thing. You know, like golf courses, for example, will spend thousands of dollars to ensure that duckweed and watermill doesn't cover up because they want a beautiful pond for their people. Everybody likes to see something beautiful, but they will spend all this money to put herbicides down on this water when in reality, if somebody was smart enough, you'd go in there and you'd harvest that stuff, take it away from there, their pond would be clean, and you would put no herbicide down, but now you had a valuable commodity in your hand that you could turn into fish food flakes or fertilizer, natural fertilizers, and market it that way. And the thing about it is, if you do it right, you'll never run out of your own product. You know, you could take and deliberately do this to a pond. Get this pond in this state. Once that stuff begins to grow, it'll just continue to grow, and you won't never run out of product. So there's a deal right there to actually put the oil company on their ear because now you got biofuels and stuff like that you can do from this deal.
You can run your engine off biofuels.
Yeah.
What question for you is out of the chat room? Do you actually have a working free energy device? And if so, do you have a link that people could look at?
I have devices that I won't classify them necessarily as free energy device because what I'm doing right now, I'm trying to get people to this understanding about efficiency because I'm catching, you wouldn't believe how much grief I catch when I talk about I'm going to prove free energy, which I believe I've more than proven. All right. What most people out there are looking for is an actual working device that's going to basically run itself. All right. Unfortunately, that's probably not going to happen without any outside deal. But what I'm trying to show people is how you can take that same amount of energy, because you'd be surprised at how much energy is actually in just a 9-volt battery. All right, there's more power in there than you could possibly imagine. It's not that we don't have enough energy. It's that we just not using it properly. And so the work that I've been doing, I've been trying to show people little bits and pieces of a puzzle to show them that, okay, like, for example, that rotary switch one that I did. When you induce a current into a coil of wire, all right, you know that that magnetic field's only going to expand so far of how much power that you put into that, all right? Well, all that energy on the way out can be used. And then as that field is collapsing, that energy on the collapse on the way back can be used as well. So you can use that energy twice to get that efficiency up. So the devices that I keep trying to show people, I'm trying to show them something that is explaining a simple concept of that. When we're using this power, right now you got a transformer that it develops eddy currents inside there, and that transformer, as you're pulsing it, will start to get hot, and they can only withstand so much heat. That's because you're cramming too much energy into that coil. All right. Well, that rotary switch, it got, you can time that thing out to maximize that pulse to allow for the full expansion of the magnetic field and the full collapsing of the magnetic field. So you can catch the energy as it's going out. You can catch it on the way back as well. You can use that energy twice. And the way that these transformers are designed, you can improve on the way that most of these transformers, they got what's called leakage of that magnetic flux. There's several things that make these things inefficient. One of which is that if you don't understand how that magnetic field is spreading out almost like in a bubble, and whatever extends past that would be leakage. So if you can take a wireless AC tester and put it near any transformer, if you're picking up a field, then that transformer's not working efficiently. If you look at the alternator in your car, there's a metal, it's like got fingers on it that surrounds the primary coil inside that rotor. Well, that magnetic flux is being used incredibly efficient because the way that is actually completely surrounding that coil. Mm. And so as that magnetic field's expanding, it saturates the entire bit of that rotor that's inside that alternator. And if you took and put a secondary right on the top of that, you would catch the expansion on the way out, and you would catch the collapsing on the way back. So you would be more efficient is basically having these coils laying right on top of each other. The whole thing is, the only thing those coils are looking for is a change in polarity from positive to negative, you know, north to south field. All right. Now, with an alternator, the way it's designed is so that it'll have a north and south pole change using the rotor, and you have to have rotation. But if you took that rotor out of there and without using rotation and you rode a secondary around that primary, and then put those metal pieces right back over the top of it as your transformer core, now you've got a really super efficient transformer that is using all of the magnetic flux instead of leaking it out the side. You see what I'm saying?
Right. Well, I'm a believer in the power of magnets, that's for sure, because I'm seeing developments, especially with the wheel that I've talked to you about many times before, Shazis, and what's going on in Germany with right now with that. I'll share it with you sometime. Pretty cool.
Well, the whole thing is I'm trying to show people the last 20 years I specifically studied on how energy actually travels. I mean, forget all the high-tech terminology. We're talking about the mechanics of how that energy actually travels. And using everything that physics has to offer and using everything that science has to offer, plasma technology told me that I could get, using high-frequency waves, I could get any of the noble gases to energize into the fourth state of matter, being plasma. Well, science says light is heat and heat is light, vice versa. So if you can see it, there's heat involved. So imagine a plasma reactor that you have your power coming in, high-frequency power coming in, and it energizes this gas into the core state of matter. Inside that reactor, you quite literally have the equivalence of a little mini sun going on. At the heart of that plasma, it's hot. They use plasma to cut steel. And so with that said, if you have a system to where you can now take this heat out of that plasma reactor, like a coil of copper or coil of stainless, and you can adjust that frequency to where you're not actually melting that material inside that plasma. You're just using it to transfer that energy. So all we did from the point we started was we took like a 12-volt battery. We ramped it up to about 20,000 volts, in the milliamp range at a high frequency. We use that high frequency to energize gas into plasma, and then we move that energy from what was DC current into an AC current, now into heat, which is the same amount of energy. We haven't lost anything yet. And then we transfer that energy off out the other way. The thing that you get when you get this going on is now you not only have the heat energy, but you also have the radiant energy that would otherwise be wasted energy. But you can take and recapture that radiant energy as this process is going on. So you're getting light, you're getting heat, and whatever liquid you circulate through that will transfer that heat to wherever you want it to go. And so this is taking everything from AC current, DC current, radio technology to heating, lighting, and just combining it into the most efficient way to utilize that energy. And the problem that everybody has and everybody's trying to overcome is they're trying to overcome the lens effect. Well, they don't understand what the lens effect actually is. When you induce a current into a coil of wire, it's a magnetic field, and you're trying to pull that power off, and the moment you turn that light bulb on, all those electrons make a circular path right back into the same generator you're starting to trying to pull on, and then you begin to create a second magnetic field that is fighting with the first one and slowing your generator down. Now, if you actually understood the direction of what that energy was traveling, what the actual electron flow itself, like watching a river go back and forth, and you was never trying to send it back the same direction that it came from, but allowing it to freely go where the normal path would be, you can quite literally design your generators to work in harmony with that doggone load that you got on there. Right. And if you're not sending those electrons directly back in there, and if you're not invoking lens effect to begin with, you need to be moving that energy away from the generator. All right, and so one of the ways to do that would be to take that same energy, change the state of that energy into something completely different, higher frequency or a plasma state, anything but the current that would actually induce a field back in that doggone generator. You take it away from that generator, store it in whatever version that you've created now, and all that is still energy. You still haven't lost anything yet. You see what I'm saying? It's not that we don't have enough energy. It's that we're just not using it properly. And so I fully believe that you can build an engine, an electric motor generator that would charge itself up. No ifs, ands, or buts. It's just putting those pieces of the puzzle together.
Exactly. You know, if we could do something simple as eliminate all the power that's lost in power lines between point of transmission to point of reception alone, we would never have to worry about energy for another 50 to 100 years on this planet, because that's how much is being wasted in our power lines. That's just one example of it. Just
and 30 feet away, you can pick it up with a wireless AC tester.
Exactly. I was reading a study on that you can actually put it right beside the power lines, and you'll get enough power to run a city if you could capture it properly. So the technology is there to do it, just is.
But here's the thing that people need to there, maybe this kind of sounds like industrial espionage or espionage, I can't even say it right, or reverse engineering, but if you learn something from the power company, go out and take a really close look at how it's made video of how a transformer that's on the pole out there is actually made. And when you see that, if you know anything about electricity and capacitors, you're going to see something that's going to blow your doors off. I knew exactly what was going on from that point. The energy that comes down those power lines, it will not run your house. It is at too high of a frequency, at too high of a voltage range. It is specifically designed. The energy that's coming down that power line is specifically designed to be able to send that energy out at a further distance. And so by the time it gets to that pole, if you try to run that straight into your house, it'd set your house on fire instantaneously. All right. So what they have to do is they have to now change that energy. They have to change the frequency of that energy and drop it back down to a safe and usable current. And how they do that is using the same processes that cause you losses in every other system and using storage technology such as the capacitor. They actually have a built-in capacitor layer inside that transformer, and for efficiency purposes, they wrap the primary right around that capacitor layer. They wrap the secondary around that one, and then if they're going to make it either from a single phase, a dual phase, or even a triple phase, they might run an extra couple primaries around or secondaries around that. But because they know how that magnetic field actually saturates that transformer core, they ain't losing nothing. Because the outside of that shielding, the outside shielding, the metal can that it's in, that is containing the majority of all that magnetic flux. Even though they're pushing it down there at such a rate that you can actually measure that from the outside, those transformers on that pole are so incredibly efficient, and they store energy so that there's no drop, no change in the power that's in your house. It stays constant. So while the tank is being filled up, you're using this over here, the tank is still continues to stay. It never goes empty. You see what I'm saying?
Interesting.
Yeah, they're incredible. You can build them yourself at home.
Yeah, you can also stick a couple poles in the ground in your backyard and draw energy right out of the ground.
Well, my point about saying that, and you're right, you can't. If you take transistors and you understand how transistors work, you can run a transistor at some really ridiculously low voltages. And right. From those low voltages, you can get a high voltage, high frequency. And if you understand how I just explained that transformer, and you had a little mini transformer down there, and you did the same exact thing that they did, you can charge that capacitor up, and as that capacitor is charging and discharging and pulsing out that magnetic field across the primary and pulsing those coils and stuff like that, you can ramp that voltage up. Old Gerard Morin out there, he proved that a long time ago. He took a 50 kV transformer and a 25 kV transformer. He started up a 2,500 watt generator, put that energy right directly into that 50 kV, and he'll never fill the top of that 50 kV transformer with that 2,500 watt unless he doesn't pull any power off of it. But what he did was, it was smart because you got a large can feeding into a small can. As long as that large can has anything at all inside of it, that small can will be topped off. And he was able to run not one, but three 1,500-watt space heaters and a reciprocating saw off of a 2,500-watt generator. And what I was listening for in the background was for that generator to start bogging down. Never did.
So three 1,500-watt heaters would be 4,500 watts. And what else?
And a reciprocating saw. Like a skill saw.
So that would draw probably 1,000 watts, a saw like that.
Yeah.
So you're talking 5,000 watts coming out of a 2,500-watt generator, which would never carry a load of 2,500. The working load would be about 2,000 watts on a 2,500-watt generator, correct?
If you plug all that into that generator directly, that generator would have fell on its face.
But right, it just bogged right out. Huh, interesting. Because I'm not a scientist. I'm not a scientist. It's just I try and absorb all this stuff. But what I want you to do before the show's over again today is plug your site and send people to some of the videos, perhaps, that you've done on this, these conversations that we've had today. Because, you know, it's hard for me especially, but I'm sure there's people out there that are a little bit more technically inclined than I am that are starting to listen to a few of these things with interest. So before the show's over today, I'd like you to maybe send people to a couple particular videos that you've done on this subject so they can continue listening to this this train of thought.
One video that I would really suggest that you watch is my video called Unsubscribe. All right? Because I was telling everybody, you know, unsubscribe. That's basically it. Because it wasn't, it's not about the numbers for me. It's about the principle of the way that science is taught in school, and it's about trying to make this world better by showing people that there's possibilities. I took a system that has nine, or let's see, one, I'll have to count them up later. It is at least, let's just say for argument's sake, there's only five of them, all right? There are five circuits that require 9 volts apiece to run, all right? And I took a little hand crank generator, and I was able to charge up a capacitor bank, and I was explaining to them how if you fill up let me explain it to you this way. If you got an Olympic-sized swimming pool, and you fill that Olympic-sized swimming pool up, and below the Olympic-sized swimming pool you have a smaller one, and then below that you have a smaller one and a smaller one all the way down to your bucket or your Dixie cup or whatever, all right? As long as that big tank up there has anything in it at all, as long as it never goes empty, then everything underneath there will run constant. Those loads, each one of them can run off of what is available inside that capacitor. And so you can literally watch how energy travels, basically just like water going down the hill. And if you took that concept and go out and look at my video series called Free Thinkers, because that thing to this very day is still running off of junk batteries, and it's pulling energy in, it's pulling radio waves in, it's pulling static electricity in, it's pulling wind power, it's pulling solar power, it's using thermal, it's using a galvanic action from a copper-coated rod and a zinc, copper-coated and galvanized rod, basically picking up energy, and all this energy coming in from different directions is keeping the capacitors going. It has a solar fence charger that is pulsing in and charging capacitors, not AC capacitors and DC capacitors used in this deal. And the batteries inside there, which I think only one or two people have figured out the purpose of those dead batteries inside there. But I'll just blow it for you. All right. If you take a battery and you take a capacitor and you look at them two side by side, they both got something in common. They have negative plates, they have positive plates, all right? In between, on one of them, you have an electrolyte, and in between the other one, you have a dielectric. So the dielectric is in the capacitor, and the electrolyte is in the battery. So you're using a chemical reaction to produce electricity, whereas in the other one, is just using for exchange of electrons, like a storage place. And so the dielectric in between is merely just whatever the breakdown voltage between those two plates was going to be. So if you got a bone dry battery, you have a capacitor. The dielectric in between there is quite literally the atmosphere between those two plates. And it has a breakdown voltage just like anything from glass to plastic or paper or whatever. There's a breakdown voltage. When you exceed that breakdown voltage, they will arc across from plate to plate. But as long as you never exceed that voltage, you can charge those two plates up differently so that they're always off balance. And if you ever want to discharge them and reach across there and touch both terminals at the same time, a dead battery actually can store power. There's just as much energy potential in a dead battery as there is in a fully charged battery, because each one of these plates have a certain amount of electrons to them. All right, anything added to that point on either plate is the difference between those two that now give you that energy that you're looking for. Does that make any sense to you?
I try and keep up with this. I really do.
I'm sorry.
But you know, listen, honestly, I'm honest with you. You know, many times I've told you that my brain doesn't kind of can't comprehend all this at once, okay? I kind of understand it a little bit, but I'm sure there's other people listening today with a little bit more understanding of what you're talking about than I am. I'm being honest, but you know what? I didn't bring you on today for me to try and understand this. I like people hearing this because when you talk, brother, I hear it right from your heart that you really are trying to make a change in our world. And that's the bottom line, is that we're all here trying to make changes. And when people start to realize that we are, and I'm convinced of this with my limited knowledge, that we're surrounded by energy. I'm starting to understand a lot about static electricity, how that can be harnessed out of our air, and that literally everything that we need for power is floating around us. And I just hope that the human race can start embracing some of these things, because to me, it's vital at this time. Yep. That we all go, hey, wait a second. Everything they've done for us in the last 100 years, since the start of the Industrial Revolution, since the start of plastics, since the start of oil, since the start of nuclear power, everything I can go down the list through the introduction of pharmaceuticals, through what they're doing to our planet, to our bodies, the list is endless. It's just like, I can't talk about something that's been beneficial to the human race in the last 100 years. And I think about that. I go, well, the benefits aren't there because we've gotten away from everything that's natural. And now is the time that we need to get back to it, buddy. We really do. And what you're talking about, I hope people, you inspire people today, because every time I talk to you, she says, I know why you're doing this and your heart's in this. And kudos to you, buddy.
Can I go back to that question from your chat room real quick?
Yes, you can.
All right, so the question was, do I have a free energy device? Actually, we all have free energy devices that we're just not putting together, and this is why I just explained to everyone how we could quite literally design an internal combustion engine that would run on pure distilled water. It's a matter, this is what kills everything in the alternative energy community, is that the most researchers out there who have the answers, they don't have the resources necessary to do the milling. Like for me, I can sit here and I can explain to you in graphic detail how it needs to be done according to physics, but I don't have a milling machine. I don't have access to a lathe, a metal lathe, and all that kind of stuff. And even if I did, I don't know that I'd necessarily have the skill set in order to be able to manufacture the things necessary. So what I do on my doggone channel is every single idea that comes to my mind, I put it together in the best possible fashion, and I put it out there as fast as possible, hoping that somebody will take this idea and run with it, because I'm not looking to get rich. I'm looking to try to show everybody something that we have had available to us all along. Energy is free. If you can't find it, you're not looking hard enough. Mm-hmm. I'm not looking for over unity. I'm not looking for zero point. I'm not looking for, you know, some sort of perpetual motion machine, even though I fully believe that the physics prove that it's more than possible. Right. The way that the laws of thermodynamics was written down was basically to discourage people from believing that it is possible that you could get a machine to charge itself. I did that video a long time ago called The Electron, where I took a junky old 1976 Suzuki, put they're 12 volts to 120 volts at 500 watts apiece, red line generators on there, the kind they use on power trucks to light up the poles in the dark or whatever. And on that also had a 36-volt four-buffer motor and a 36-volt charger, and it's using a Volkswagen charging system on the 12-volt side, and it's actually using on the same deal, because the 12-volt is basically being wired into a part of the series wound portion of the battery bank. And so as you're driving this thing, you're putting energy back into the same doggone deal. And it doesn't defy any laws of physics. And the reason why it's not something that's like right out there on the market, because it's made out of junk. If I could get a hold of one of those motorcycles that they call the Zero, that's already set up and had all that precision work on her, number one, you just raised my efficiency level up of several 100%, because what I got, everything wobbles, it's out of balance, or there's all kinds of losses in the system. But the concept of what I just showed them, if they took the time So maybe it's not self-looping. You throw a doggone solar panel on that thing, and now you just added to that system. You throw some thermal electrics on there, now you just added to the system again. You throw some static electricity technology that where you could actually pull electricity right off the road because any two different materials that you rub together will produce a static charge. You can actually grab energy on the way down the doggone road. These hydrogen-celled cars that could be put together would literally take any air out of a humid climate and turn it into moisture and then separate that moisture into fuel for that same vehicle. You wouldn't even have to stop at the gas station, for Pete's sake.
I think you should be president, Shiziz.
At least
that's what I think. Shiziz for president, that's what I'd say, because, you know, really it is. I mean, you talk about this stuff and I'm just going, wow, you know, but you're correct. I mean, I'm not a scientist, but I've looked into it a lot and I have a basic understanding about it. And static is something that we haven't even really touched yet. The power of static is just,
and it's there. Lord Kelvin generator.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was picking up static as water was falling. And you know, when it rains outside, there's a lot of electricity involved.
Yeah, I know. You tell me that when I was a kid, and I go, yeah, sure. You know, or tell that to somebody else, they go, yeah, sure. But it's true, guys. So listen, you know, we're down to the last couple minutes, last minute of the show here, Shiziz. And first off, I want to thank you for joining. And I know we've had some really good response in the chat. I'm sure we've got a few other people maybe taking a look at some of the things you're doing, which would really make me happy because I praise people like you and other people that are really trying to make a change in our environment and our world to make it better for everybody. Because we are in some crazy times right now. And like I said before, folks, I don't think we're at the point of no return, but I think it's not our duty, it's our absolute responsibility right now to start looking at some of these things and start making some changes, because I think we're in some real trouble here in the near future, and I don't want to see that for my children or your children or people this planet. I love you guys to the core. I love everybody right to the bottom of my heart, and I don't want to see what I see coming. And if you guys help me out and help Shiziz out and help other people out that are trying to get the word out, I would really appreciate that. With that, I'm going to close the show. Last comment from you, Shiziz, before I let you go. Plug your show one more time and I'll end the show for the week.
Well, just Google up Shiziz, S-H-A-Z-I-Z-Z. There's only one crazy haired guy who looked like me, so you'll find me on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and all that. But the biggest thing is that I'm asking everybody out there. They say I got 8,000 some odd subscribers on my YouTube channel. The way that we always end the Knights of the Round Table and the Mad Science Show, as we say, I'm not wanting no donations from you. All I want you to do is take a second of your time, post a link somewhere and share that and bring people to the table so that we can share all this knowledge that we've gathered up and share it with each other and get things done, because there ain't no government ever going to get it done for you. It's going to have to be we the people. If we want hydrogen technology, then we're going to have to take it. If we want free energy devices, then we're going to have to make them, and they are available flat out. No ifs, ands, or buts. 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt, energy's free, and if somebody wants to humor me long enough, I will prove it to you.
There's a great challenge for you guys. Take that challenge, please, because you'll look into it some more, and I'm sure a lot more light bulbs will come on in your brain. Thanks for coming in, Shiziz, and we'll carry on this conversation again in the very near future.
Cool.
Thanks for what you're doing. Hey, thanks, guys, for tuning in. We're gone a minute or two over here. It's the end of the show for the week. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll be back next Sunday, the same time, same place, with a couple other cool people to talk with. Love you guys, and have a great week, and we'll see you next week, same time. Bye for now.